This episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MAI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. When you go on vacation, you want to make sure that all the details are covered. You want to make sure all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, and that's what the vacation planners at MAI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel can do for you. They take the worry out of your vacation planning, and they will do their best to make sure that you get the most out of your vacation. We want you to visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com, or you can get to them by clicking on their banner on the Mickey Miles Podcast website.
Hi, this is Susan from Maine, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 101 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, hailing all the way from WDW Today, and with me on the show tonight is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I am feeling good. Back to running after coming back from California, and now getting ready for the Tower of Terror 10-miler. And by the way, don't you have a shout out and an announcement and some Run Disney news?
You just guessed all those things, huh?
I'm a good guesser.
Yes, I do. First of all, our shout out is to somebody who came to our Mickey Miles podcast meet who says she's been hankering for a shout out, and her name is Pamela Potter Frost. And we really, Mike and I both really enjoyed chatting with Pamela. So, Pamela, here's your shout out. You earned it. The next thing I wanted to say is that, Mike, I hope you will contain your excitement. We have planned a meetup for the Tower of Terror race. And do you want to know when it is? Are you going to be there?
It's in October.
Yes, it's October 6th at 2 p.m.
Haagen-Dazs.
No, not Haagen-Dazs. If you show up at Haagen-Dazs, you're going to be on the wrong coast and nobody will be there. Well, but you'll get ice cream. We're going to be at the – we had a meet here before and it was really comfortable and hopefully it'll work out okay. But we're going to be at the Beach Club at the Solarium. So go to the Beach Club. It's sort of across from the store. If you go across from the store, you'll find us at the Solarium. And we'd love to see you. It's at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 3 p.m. And then I have to catch a plane back to New Hampshire right after that. And before we head on, the last bit of thing I want to talk about is some Run Disney news, which is if you are running the Tower of Terror 10-miler, the final race instructions are available, and now you can print your waiver and find out what corral you're in. And we've said it many times before on the podcast, please be sure to print your waiver before you leave. You don't want to print it at the expo. So that's all the news right now.
That's all the news that's fit to print, and we're doing questions, and for us to be able to answer all the questions, we searched far and wide for an expert to help us up, and we came up with
da, 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 da.
Helen Dunn. Hi, Helen.
Hello. That's quite an intro.
Yes, you know, the band, the orchestra didn't show up, I guess. But
maybe in post-production there'll be an
orchestra. Never know. You never know. These post-production people can do a lot of wonders. Thank you, Helen, for joining us and helping us answer the 2 or 3 million questions we hope to cover on our show tonight.
Well, I'm always excited to be on the show.
And she's the first guest on our next 100 episodes. So
we're
starting off very well.
This is Questions 101. So, Michelle, please start us off.
Okay, so here we go. Question number one is from Shay Newell. And her question is, Dear Mike and Michelle, congratulations on finishing the Dumbo Double Dare. I ran the 10K at Disneyland, and I have a question about race course etiquette. After battling several injuries while training for a marathon 3 years ago, I reached the conclusion that the only way I can run and stay healthy is to follow Jeff Galloway's run, walk, run method. As my walk breaks approach, I try to stay aware of my position on the road relative to other runners and walkers. I've always understood that walkers were to stay toward the edges of the race course, which is where I try to be when I start to walk. If I can't get to the edge, I'll either keep running until I can or turn around to make sure no one is immediately behind me before I start to walk. I found during the 10K, however, that walkers were all over the place, sometimes 3 and 4 abreast, and even when I was far to the edge of the course, as I could be, runners were still mowing me down. It seemed like nobody was on the same page as far as etiquette. As a result, I feel like I wasted a lot of energy waving between people during my running intervals, and I felt like I was just in everyone else's way during my walk intervals. So, is my understanding about walk-run etiquette correct? Is there something I could do or something you could do to encourage your listeners to do to try to avoid these problems on the race course? I know not everyone on the course will understand or abide by proper etiquette, but perhaps if more people were informed about it, things would go more smoothly. Thanks. So, Helen, I know that you are part of a Galloway group, and what do you think about Shay's question?
Well, I think it's a shame, but that's one of the things that happens a lot at larger races, is that you do run into people who are new runners and traveling with friends and stuff, and they're not really thinking about how they affect the other people on the race course, and that's just one of those things. But in the Galloway group, one of the things they do to try to make people aware of what you're going to do is to raise your arm up above your head and kind of shout out run or walk when you're switching between activities, and staying to the side is the other thing.
Mike, do you have anything to add?
I think picking up on what Helen said, the more runners you have in a race, the more chance that you're going to have poor examples of runners' etiquette. I don't know if it's a rule, but I sort of have always thought that walkers would stay on the left side, on the right side, all the way over to the right, and run walkers or slower runners would be a little bit to the right of the center, and the quicker, faster runners would be on the left side of the course. Doesn't always happen that way. And regarding the Galloway people, and I've done this too, when I stop about 2 or 3 strides before I stop, I raise my hand to let those behind me know that this guy's going to stop and he's going to start walking.
Well, it's interesting because I think that one thing that I noticed was that there were more people doing it in this 10K. It's Disney's first 10K. I was wondering if you both thought one of the reasons might be because there were newer runners, you know, people trying to make that bridge from a 5K to a 10K. What do you think?
I think so. I think that a lot of people are, especially those who have never done anything beyond 3 miles, something like 4, 5, 6 miles seems like a huge distance. Confidence-wise, I think they feel that their chances of finishing the race would be best if they do a run, walk, run. Helen?
Yeah, I think that's true that the newer runners tend to do that. I mean, I've been running for a long time, and I do run, walk. But yeah, I think it is true in the new races and the Disney races especially. That attracts a lot of rookies.
Yeah, I think it doesn't matter what your confidence level is. I mean, I know Helen does a lot of marathons, and I do a lot of halves and have done a full. So the other thing that I wanted to mention was when I was running with our friend Jill, who was on the Running Gear for Girls podcast when Helen was on, she had one of the timers on her Galloway Gym Boss counted down, kind of did a 5 second or 10 second beep. So I'm not sure which alarm that is on the Gym Boss, but that may be something to listen for when you're out there to help you to decide when to move over and to when the person in front of you is about to move over.
Our next question comes from Liz from Chicago, and she says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I am approaching my 1 year anniversary of running. I'm calling it my runniversary. Yet I still have questions. I completed the Happy Haunted 5K trail run in October 2012, the Royal Family 5K, and Princess Half in February, the Chicago Shamrock Shuffle 8K in April, and the Chicagoland Springtime Half Marathon in May. So by mid-June, I knew it was time for new shoes. I went to a reputable running store. I had purchased my first pair of running shoes. I showed them my current shoes, which are Mizuno's, and told them
my foot issues. My right heel often moves, and I have to strangle the laces to keep it down. Also, I have self-diagnosed plantar fasciitis. I always get that wrong.
Fasciitis.
I tried on new shoes and a pair of insoles to help with the plantar stuff that Mike can't pronounce. The work has said that the shoes felt good. I could go with a lighter shoe, like a Nike, since I would have the whole, I would have the insole. From the end of June until the end of August, several things happened. I lost a toenail on the left foot at the end of July. I will lose a toenail on the right foot. It's colorful right now. I blistered my right heel terribly at the end of August on a routine run. After talking with a runner who has more experience than I, she looked at my shoes, felt my toe area, and said, "Of course you're having trouble. Those shoes are too small." I got a reference to a new running store and got new shoes right away. They seemed to be great. I took the ill-fitting shoes back to the store. I had the receipt, and a different employee had me try them on again. He agreed and said, "Yes, those are too small." He apologized, took back the shoes, and applied the full price towards a different pair. So when does a small incident like a toenail or the blister become a sign? Also, is there any way to tell if a shoe is right when you are jogging around the store or around the block? It doesn't seem like you know until you really run. Thanks for taking the time to answer my questions. I appreciate learning something new every episode. So the question here, ladies, is shoes. And what signs tell us that our shoes are too small? Ellen?
Well, my running shoes are all half a size bigger than my regular world shoes. So that's one thing that maybe not everybody knows that they should be sizing up. And I would say I can fit like my a whole thumb width between my biggest toe and the end of that shoe if I push down on it. So that's how I can tell they're kind of the right size.
And Helen, why do you get a half a size bigger?
I guess it's because over the longer distances, I don't know if your feet swell or they just tend to move around longer. I don't know what the scoop is, but definitely in the longer miles, you need that extra space for your toes to kind of spread out and not have any issues.
I would agree. Mine are a whole size bigger than my regular world shoes, to the point where sometimes I forget, and when I'm buying regular shoes, I buy the wrong size. I buy them too big. But my feet do swell. The other thing, too, Liz, is that I know that one of my feet is actually bigger, a little slightly bit longer than the other, which might explain why your heel is coming out. I always have to fit for my right foot, which is a little bit longer. But I think the question is, you know, how do you know what is like regular wear and tear problems and what is something where you should bring the running shoes back? And I think that during the length of your training, that's when you're going to see that. There are some things that I always have to deal with, blisters in certain places, regardless of what shoe. But I know for me, I got the wrong pair of running shoes at a running store, and I developed an Achilles problem that I didn't have, so I brought it back. So that's one of the arguments for going to a running store and saving your receipt, is that they will let you try it out. But you got to just use your common sense. When something just doesn't feel right, bring it back. I think toenails, you know, they will come off sometimes for the longer runs. But what do you think, Mike?
I think Liz is finding out one of the challenges of a new runner, and that is to figure out not just what size shoe, but also the make and model of the shoe that works best for your feet. One of the things, Liz, that you should always keep in mind is that it's true. As you run, the longer the distance, the more likely that your foot will get bigger or swell up. I know that for so many years, the most I would ever run would be 6, 7, 8, 9 miles, maybe 8 miles. And then when I started getting into the longest distances, I noticed I had to go up a size. So we're all running longer distances, and that means our feet will get bigger as we get along into those long races. The other thing I wanted to mention, too, is that keep your toenails trimmed as best as you can, because just as if you have a shoe that is too tight, if your socks are too tight, if your toenail is pushing up against the sock every time you land, it's going to present a problem. So hopefully your shoes are going to be okay, and always be aware of anything that your feet tell you, because your body likes to talk to you when it thinks that you should know something.
And I'm sure Mike would say that probably when you find the pair that works for you, kind of stick with that model.
Yes, forever and ever.
Yeah, although New things come out, but okay. The next question is from Andrea Orellana, and she says, I've been training this summer for a half marathon, and I will run next Saturday, the DC Diva. After that half, my next half will be the Wine and Dine in November. In between, I'll be running a few 5Ks, possibly a 10K, and definitely a 7-mile anchor leg of the Baltimore Marathon in October. After Wine and Dine, I'll need to either maintain my mileage for the WDW 10K in January, Tinkerbell half, and Glass Slipper Challenge in February. My question is related to ongoing training schedules. Is there a service or an application that will allow me to build a training schedule based on all the planned races and distances I'm prepping for? Everything I find online is used with the intention of training for a single race. Basically, if I'm using the Galloway schedules as posted on the Run Disney website, then how do I blend them together correctly? Thanks, and I look forward to seeing you on the course in November. Mike?
I'm not an app person, Andrea, but I think that that your training is just going to help you. I don't think you'll have to worry if it's going to hurt you. I know that Michelle has signed up for the Galloway training, and she has told Jeff about all the little races or many different things she's doing, like the Dumbo Double Dare, like a interesting race she's got coming up where she's running at night with people in vans or whatever. And she also has
the
10-miler and race ran to the beach. And she has all these other things. And I'm sure Jeff has come across people who have those kinds of races in between, besides having that that big goal at the end. So Michelle, can you shed any light on this? How does one blend? My guess is that there are times when you just alternate long and short runs.
Yeah, so I actually am an app person, and I haven't found anything like this yet. I'm sure it's on the horizon. But what I did was when I started working with Jeff, I looked at his training schedule that you're going to find online, which basically has a long run and then a short run, shorter run week, and then a long run week. And basically, he gave me something very similar to that schedule when I started. And then I said, oh, wait a second, I'm running Dumbo Double Dare, Tower of Terror, Wine and Dime, Reach the Beach. And so what he did was he sort of overlaid that onto my schedule so that when I'm doing those long race weekends, that kind of aligns with what he had for long race weekends on the Dopey, which is what I'm ultimately training for with him. So I do tell him how I'm doing on those other races, but that's how I do it. So that's what I would suggest to you. Write down all those other races. Look at the training schedule for the longest race that you're going to be doing and see if you can find weeks when you can align those. Helen, what do you think?
I think you have given pretty good advice there. The only thing I would throw in is to, if you have to, choose one of the races as like your goal race or your A-level race. And if you have to, you know, run harder or softer on some of these races in order to peak at your one you care about the most, I would think about that in the schedule. But it looks like most of these races are kind of good training levels. You know, she's doing some 10Ks and some halves, and that I think is going to she's probably going to be in a good spot for all of those races. I think it's a little easier when you don't have to ramp all the way up to marathon distance in there.
It's true.
Yeah, I think she'll have a good base. Our next question comes from Chris Ducasse. And Chris says, hey, all, I'm heading off to Walt Disney World in October. Sadly, not far, the Tower of Terror 10-miler. It's going to be an awesome trip with the family for my son's second birthday. Anyone have any great paths to take for my runs? It's after Chicago Marathon, but I'll be training for Dopey. I'm staying at the Pop Century Resort. If there is anything close to that, thanks in advance for any assistance. Well, as someone who spent about 125 to 130 nights at Pop Century, and I've run there about, 10 or 15 times, I can tell you, Chris, that particular resort, especially now that the Art of Animation has opened up, offers you a very, very, very good opportunity to run. My suggestion is to run on the outer rim, but if you do, you have to be very careful for the traffic. And if you do run, my suggestion is to run very early in the morning. If you run through Pop Century and across, I think it's called Hourglass, a Generation Gap Bridge to the Art of Animation, and run around that outer rim, I believe one entire once around that rim is probably close to 4 to 5 miles. So I think that would be the thing to do. I caution you not to run on Buena Vista Drive because traffic is always, always going crazy in Orlando. There are people going to work. I remember running one time real early in the morning near the Magic Kingdom, and it was just amazing traffic, and it was 6 o'clock in the morning. Okay, I think I took up all the time for that question. Helen or Michelle?
I was just going to say I only run at Disney when I'm doing races, but I do know that you have that great section on your website that has the maps from all of the resorts.
We certainly do. So if you go on MickeyMilesPodcast.com/run-the-resorts, you'll see icons of all the different resorts on there. If you click on Pop Century, just as Mike said, if you run around the different buildings, we have the running route that Disney gives you at the front desk. There are two routes, an A and a B route. The A route, and I believe this is done before you could go over that Generation Bridge and go to Art of Animation, but the A route, just running Pop Century, is 1.1 miles. The B route is 1.38. But as Mike mentioned, you can probably go over and get a pretty long run. If you want to go somewhere else, my favorite place to run is Beach Club Boardwalk, heading up towards Studios and back around, Swan and Dolphin. Those are nice runs as well. Okay. The next question is from Steve Brown, and he actually has a suggestion too. He says, listening to a review of the Disneyland half marathon while running today, I thought, what if Run Disney put 2 fast passes in every snack box? That would get people to the park as well for them, or putting a park pass in every 1,000th box like Willy Wonka. Helen, what do you think about that?
I think this is like the greatest idea ever. I wish that they would do it.
Now, weren't you telling us off air before that you have, maybe it was the Marine Corps where they did this?
Yeah, at Marine Corps Marathon, they have like, I don't remember how many they give away, but say like every 500 goodie bags is like a special golden ticket goodie bag. And instead of just getting a bunch of coupons, you actually get a pair of sneakers and a pair of Southwest airline tickets and, you know, all kinds of awesome stuff. And it's really just random. Just people just get the super deluxe bag. And it's like a cool thing. Like you hope you're going to win the lottery when you're at packet pickup.
What do you think, Mike? Do you like that idea? Fast passes or a park pass in your goodie bag?
Yeah, I think that I think they would go for the fast passes. I don't know if they would go for the park passes, but I think that they would go for the fast passes. It would be something that I would think a race director would want to do to promote and draw more people. I don't think Disney has to worry about that, but I think Steve's suggestion would make the registration fee a little bit more palatable, let's say. What do you think? Yes?
Well, I think it would be really exciting and fun. And I think that maybe if they tied it to the people who are at the expo, the exhibitors at the expo. So you pick up your bag and you get, a free stick from the massage stick, or a free pair of sneakers, or a free pair of Run Disney shoes or something like that. I think that would be really fun. Fast passes would be great too. I would take those. I'd be thrilled.
Yeah, free fast pass is the only way I'm getting on Toy Story on marathon weekend.
It's true.
It's true. Our next question comes from Karen Ellis, who says, my daughter-in-law is running the Wine and Dine half for the first time to get her dual coast medal. We all get off the Fantasy on November 9th, and we are booked at DVC Jumbo House. We won't have a car. What is the best way for her to get from the resort to pick up her packet, then back that evening to start the race at ESPN? Post-race, how can she get back to Jumbo House? We booked our rooms before the race issue came up, so we are locked in with DVC. Run Disney does not seem to have any live operators to answer questions. Can she use host resort transportation? It infers that only hotel guests from that resort can use it. Thanks for your great, informative, and inspiring podcasts. Well, do we know if Animal Kingdom Lodge is a host resort for the Wine and Dine?
So, yes, I hope, Karen, that we inspire you with this answer. So one thing to consider is that final race instructions for most races don't come out until a month before the race. So we're going off the final race instructions from the 2012 Wine and Dine Half Marathon. These are all on the Mickey Mouse Podcast website, all the former final race instructions. Last year, the host resorts included the Animal Kingdom Lodge. And if you're DVC, of course, you know, Jumbo Host is part of the Animal Kingdom Lodge. The nice thing is, in my experience, you get off the boat really early in the morning. If you take coming back from Port Canaveral, she'll probably be back 10, 11 o'clock. That should be plenty of time to take the bus over to the expo, pick up her stuff, and take the bus back. If she's worried about time, what I would do is just jump into a cab. Lots of cabs in front of Animal Kingdom, and that's what I would do. But she should be perfectly okay. I would be shocked if Animal Kingdom Lodge was not part of one of the hosts again. What do you think, Mike?
I think that's a great idea about the cab, Michelle, because, wow, that's maybe a $10 ride, if that much, because it's maybe 5 minutes from Animal Kingdom. So I think that the cab ride might be more comfortable than the bus ride, but hopefully everything will work out well for Karen.
And Mike, did she say Friday? She's coming Friday or Saturday?
She'd get off on November 9th,
November
and I'm not
9th.
Sure.
Okay, so November 9th this year is, we'll have to see. The expo last year was open. Okay, November 9th is going to be a Saturday. So last year, the expo was open until 4:30. So she'll have plenty of time if she gets off that boat.
In the morning around 7:30, 8 o'clock?
Right. And then she'll jump on the bus again with other runners. So she'll be okay.
Yeah, I would suggest, though, Karen, that that as soon as you get to Walt Disney World, you go right over to ESPN. And get your race packet. I would not waste any time.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be running around doing that. And as far as I know, for that race, there's no place right before the race to pick up your race packet. So that's what I would do, Karen. Let us know what happens.
And that does it for our questions. I want to thank Helen for coming on board. Helen had to leave early, so we thank her for giving us some assistance in answering these questions.
And of course, the Mickey Miles Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They are the vacation planners that you need to go see if you want a perfect vacation. They know everything that you need to know if you're planning any type of Disney vacation, or for that matter, any vacation. They are the experts. They know how to get the most for your vacation dollar. And don't forget, they are a fee free agency. So go visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com, or you can get to them by clicking on their banner at mickeymilespodcast.com.
And so for Michelle Scribner-McLean, this is Mike Scopa. We'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. And we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.